We never wanted to be in a fancy metropolitan broadcast facility where the most thought-provoking thing within view is an occasional four-car pileup on the freeway below. We like being miles from nowhere, in the middle of a vineyard that cannot be seen from the little two-lane road on the other side of that rise. Our barn has awesome acoustics and was built with hand tools over 100 years ago. Nonetheless, we've got some really state-of-the-art broadcast technology inside. And our wine cellar, once a root cellar, that is absolutely packed with wine we've collected or been given by friends. Welcome. You have just set foot on Grape Encounters radio property, where we don't believe in no trespassing signs. But let's make this our little secret. Oh, and that wine is protected by the sweetest-looking golden retriever who dated a bipolar Doberman for a while, so don't get any ideas.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow.
Well, it is another perfect day in paradise, and I hope you've picked out a special wine to enjoy as we go in search of this week's grape encounter. I'm David Wilson, your wine captain on this week's journey, coming to you from our super secret broadcast location where there's a whole lot of activity going on in the vineyard just outside. It is that special time of year, and you may hear a little tractor noise, but we're going to definitely put up with it for the next hour because the wine does come first, after all. Today, you're going to get to meet the man who is largely considered to be California's leading wine historian. We've got lots to talk about with Charles Sullivan, including a wine ghost story or two to get you in the mood for Halloween, my favorite holiday. Matt Dubow of EpicStyle.com, our gadget guru, will also help get us in the Halloween spirit. You know, actually, any visit with Matt is certain to be spirited. Love bantering with Matt. Grape Encounters is, of course, proudly sponsored by EpicStyle.com, the ultimate online source for everything wine and spirit lovers could possibly want. Thousands of the hottest products, from incredible corkscrews to decanters, preservation systems, and paraphernalia for the perfect picnic. I love EpicStyle.com. You have to check it out. Now, before we get into all that, I have to admit that I have something on my mind that's been on my mind literally all week. You know, when you have to pack a lot of material into an hour, sometimes you don't have the luxury of making sure that you are totally and completely understood. And I hate when that happens.
I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
The past couple of weeks, we've been talking about some of the bargain basement wines available at clearance stores like Big Lots. Now, a lot of these wines can be purchased for as little as $2 or $3, and you'd expect that anything as cheap as that might be best suited for removing the varnish off a piece of furniture you want to restore or permanently silencing the neighbor's incessantly yappy dog. But much to my surprise, some of the wines that we tried were not the sort of thing that you would dare someone to drink. I actually used a couple of very complimentary adjectives, including tasty and delicious. Now, in doing so, I suspect that there were a number of you wine purists out there who let out a gigantic synchronized groan of disapproval. Now, that was a very good time for me to explain the Grape Encounters theory of wine relativity. But the truth is, I just plain didn't get to it. As a result, I kind of stewed about it all week because I've come to believe that how much enjoyment we get from a bottle of wine depends a great deal upon the situation that we're in. Now, I meet a lot of people who drink wine within a very narrow range. They'll tell you that it can't be good if it's under X number of dollars, or if it isn't made a certain way, or if it doesn't come from a certain place, or if it hasn't received a score above, say, 92 or 93. And I was absolutely, positively one of those people, and I'm confessing that to you now. But after many years of drinking countless bottles of wine in almost every imaginable place and situation, I am here to tell you that it doesn't hurt to lighten up a bit. For instance, in the 60s and the 70s, people were consuming cheap white wines like Chablis and French Colombard by the gallons. I mean, they were literally buying it in gallon jugs, and they were having a lot of fun doing it. Actually, people are still doing that. If you spend half the afternoon working in the yard in the hot sun, an ice-cold, crisp, white, inexpensive bottle of wine can taste a lot like heaven. Now, on the other hand, that same wine might not measure up at a fancy dinner party. So what do? We break out a special Sauvignon Blanc at $30 to $40 a bottle to go with that mouth-watering Chilean sea bass. Wait a second. Maybe we should serve a Chilean wine to go with that fish. Nope, Chilean wines are cheap. Chilean sea bass, on the other hand, is $38 a pound. Seriously, I just bought some Chilean sea bass the other day. It's almost as expensive as lobster. So you don't want to take any unnecessary wine risks. Besides, at that dinner, you have time to really savor and contemplate the wine. When you're out sweating in the yard, on the other hand, your focus is probably on your weed whacker, not your bodacious Bordeaux. Now, let's look at this from another perspective. Even though most people order beer at concerts and sporting events, I still lean toward wine. Now, there's no doubt in my mind that the stuff that they pour at the stadium is never going to make it on Wine Spectator's list of recommendations. Nonetheless, it's kind of nice being able to have a glass of wine at a concert or hockey game, even if the cost of a glass of that unquestionably inferior wine is 4 times what you'd pay for the whole bottle at Costco. It's all relative. Now, I've been to more than a few parties where the wine that was served had me thinking, what were they thinking? Well, they were thinking that pouring wine for 50 people can get expensive fast, so they grabbed the cheapest thing they could find. Now, these days, there's so much wine out there, you can absolutely, positively find a perfectly suitable wine that people having a great time at a party will enjoy without giving it much thought. A couple of those big lot wines were, in fact, pleasant to drink, especially given their $3 price tag. Now, yes, these were probably mass-produced using formulas and passionless winemaking techniques. But seriously, that's also how they make Pepsi, how they make Big Macs, Snickers bars, and millions of people love these things and don't complain about it. Now, most of the time when I sit down to have a glass of wine, seriously, I'd prefer to drink something that's truly magical, wines that have you saying, I can't believe anything can taste this good, wines that make you truly sad when the bottle's empty. But I recently interviewed a guy who was a highly respected wine expert who said one of the greatest thrills in his life is discovering delicious wines under $10 a bottle. It boils down to this: if it gives you pleasure at the time and in the place you're consuming it, it's a good wine, cheap or not, mass produced or not, gold medal winning or not. If you find yourself saying, why am I drinking this? Don't drink it, because for the price of a bottle of Evian at a convenience store, you can find something that will really please you. Now, all that being said, there is nothing, and I mean nothing, more pleasurable than a finely crafted bottle of wine made by people who've poured their heart and soul into its creation. If it costs you 40, 60, 80, or 100 bucks, there's a pretty good chance it's going to be worth every penny. And when you consider how carefully it was babied from the ground to the glass, years and years of hard work and TLC, I think it's worth it. Great wines are seldom accidental. But the thing is, there are a lot of pleasant surprises that also come out of inexpensive bottles found in unlikely places. So quality and value all depend on a variety of circumstances, and that is my theory of wine relativity. Yesterday, I was driving down the road minding my own business when traffic suddenly came to a very abrupt halt, and I had my seatbelt on, but unfortunately, my grande non-fat cappuccino from Starbucks did not have its seatbelt on, and suddenly my car had a two-tone interior. Now, I've been telling you about a product that I am fortunate to introduce to you. It is called Napkin, and this was a great opportunity to put it through its paces. I grabbed the napkin and I wet it with water from my water bottle that I always keep in my car. It expanded very quickly into this fabulous towel, and I was actually able to soak up absolutely everything that spilled in my car. The napkin is an absolutely incredible product. It compresses down to the size of what really looks like a large breath mint, but you wet it and it expands into this very soft, very sturdy towel, really an amazing product. They have all kinds of different napkins to choose from, and you can check it out online at napkinjnc.com. That's napkinjnc.com. It gets the Grape Encounters seal of approval. Now, before we get to our guest interviews, I wanted to call your attention to some very interesting wine-related online resources. The first one is tastingroom.com, a very cool site. Now, utilizing a proprietary process, tastingroom.com bottles and sells sample size wines from notable wineries in 50 milliliter bottles. Now, what's novel about this is that you can actually get a sample about the size of a sample that you would have in a wine tasting room, and they have mixed sampler packs so you can try a number of different wines at home and at your leisure. Another interesting site is halfwitwines.com, and this is a site that only sells splits, half bottles. So if you don't want to buy a full bottle of wine, they have a selection of over 1,200 wines that include everything from California cabs to Israeli red blends. Another very cool site you'll want to check out is Accidental Wine Company. Now, what they sell are bottles of wine that for some reason or another can't be sold on the open market. Maybe the wine label is bruised, maybe there's a bumped foil cap, smudging on the bottle, or maybe the vintage is too old or the wines just plain aren't selling. Check it out at AccidentalWineCompany.com. And then finally, one of the most interesting sites that you may want to visit is Crush Pad Wines. Now, Crush Pad Wines is a custom crush facility, and if you've got a couple of $1,000s, you can make wine under the tutelage of some very, very expert winemakers. But what a lot of people don't know is those wines are available for purchase, and you can purchase them at Crush Pad sites. So check out Crush Pad Wines. Very interesting. In just a moment, Charles Sullivan and Matt Dubow here on Grape Encounters Radio. So glad you could join us. If there's any winemaking operation that I'm really proud to endorse and talk about on a regular basis, it's Sarlos & Sons in Los Olivos, California. You know, we did one of the very first broadcasts of Grape Encounters Radio from the Sarlos & Sons tasting room. And I'll tell you, it really set the tone for our show, because Sarlos & Sons really is everything that Grape Encounters Radio is all about. They do more than just make great wines. They pour their personality into every single bottle, and it's evident in every sip that you take. Sarlos & Sons wines are very special. These are very special people, and you simply won't go wrong by buying their wines. You can find their wines at sarlosandsons.com. That's S-A-A-R-L-O-O-S and sons.com. Or better yet, why not just pack your bags and head up to Los Olivos and check them out firsthand? It's Sarlos & Sons Wines. It doesn't get any better than that. Would you love to go someplace special and enjoy a nice Bordeaux on your birthday? Well, you'll have a lot of money to spend on wine if you celebrate on Catalina Island. That's because the fast and comfortable Catalina Express will take you to Catalina on your birthday absolutely free. This program was unveiled on May 1st to celebrate the 30th birthday of the Catalina Express, and guess who got to be the first to take advantage of this truly awesome offer? Yep, little old Mayday me. Catalina Express has multiple daily departures out of Long Beach, San Pedro, and Dana Point, and for a small fee, you can even upgrade to the Commodore's Lounge, where a nice glass of wine, champagne, or their world-famous Bloody Mary is part of the package. Birthday or not, this is a great time to visit Catalina. For more information about schedules, fares, hotel packages, activities like the new Zipline Eco Tour, or to book tickets online, visit CatalinaExpress.com. Start your adventure at CatalinaExpress.com.
It's so easy to go to Catalina, Catalina Express, Catalina.
From wine preservation and perfect aeration to cork cages, cheese knives, and things you'll need on your next wine vacation. From decorative stoppers and neoprene koozies to hand-painted glasses, some are really doozies. From ice buckets, glass charms, and other nice touches to practical things like decanter brushes. If it relates to wine or spirits or beer, rest assured that the world's leading expert is here. He presents all the hottest accessories to you. He's the one and the only Wine Gadget Guru.
Yes, indeed. He's the guy who knows everything about wine-related stuff. It's Matt Dubow here on Grape Encounters Radio. Matt, Halloween's coming, and I understand you got a doozy of a costume this year.
Well, we're going to this really elaborate costume party, and I watched the show called Hillbilly Hand Fishing.
And you've come up with a costume. But what, pray tell, Matt, are you going to dress?
I'm going to be one of the fishermen, one of the hillbillies from Oklahoma, and I got a catfish. I have my overalls.
Wait, you just blew right past, I've got my catfish. A real catfish.
No, it's not a real catfish. It's a stuffed catfish.
Come on.
I'll stick my hand in it.
Why don't you get a real catfish? Go down to some fish market someplace and get some big 30-pound catfish and take it.
Oh, I don't want to be lugging that around.
You could have
all
little,
night.
Small, airline-sized bottles of wine inside the catfish's cavity, and you could pull them out and give people the wine.
I know, but it's going to stink.
I'll tell you what. I would settle for this. Open up a can of sardines the day before, just leave them out, and then just kind of rub them on your arms before you go out.
Oh, I'll take that under advisement.
Halloween and wine, it's a very good time. There's a lot of really cool wines out there that are named for Halloween. Wine figures very prominently into Halloween,
yes.
And also for epicstyle.com.
It definitely does.
Big on Halloween, right?
Definitely does.
But you've got these really cool Halloween stoppers. Everything from a haunted house to tombstones.
Right, with ghosts on it.
And some of the wines that you and I have tasted here deserve a stopper with tombstones on it.
Yes, they were bad.
Yes, and then you have the jack-o'-lantern stoppers as well, and some of the wines that we've had recently taste like they were made from pumpkin.
I don't think fermented they were that good.
Pumpkin. Yeah, not that good. You know, there's a winery coming from the Armida Winery. It's called Armida Poison, P-O-I-Z-I-N. So you can imagine it's a Syrah, right?
It's a Zinfandel.
It's
right?
A Zinfandel, yes. And one of the most beautiful wines you'll ever see, a detailed skull graphic silk screen onto the bottle, and the reserve edition comes in a coffin.
Oh, wow.
I like the idea. It's not just made for Halloween. There's the Evil Cabernet comes from Australia, and this is a beautiful wine. And they're very clever because if you hold the box upside down, it doesn't say evil anymore. It says live. Clever Aussies, huh? Depending upon how you hold it. And then there's a true Romanian wine, home of vampires and Dracula and people like that. It's called the Werewolf Cabernet. It comes from Jericho Wine. It is a Romanian wine and actually reported to be very, very good. Terrific wine, and they do import it into the States, so you can find that. Let's see what else you've got. For those crummy wines that we have been tasting, you have this wonderful wine bag with the skull and crossbones.
Whoa. Number one, I'm not going to just put a crummy wine in this bag. This is a great bag. So I don't know why you would say you put a crummy bottle of wine in it. And I take offense to that because I think you could put a silver oak in this bottle and still have the same effect.
How do you explain the symbolism of you put a silver oak in a bag with skull and crossbones? What are you going to tell the person you hand that to?
Happy Halloween. I'm here.
Happy Halloween.
What do you mean? It's a gift. It's for Halloween.
Whoa,
come on.
Wait. I just caught something I hadn't figured I was going to hear. So you go to somebody's house, you hand them a bag with a skull and crossbones, and you say, Happy Halloween, and there's a silver oak in there. And what time can you be over on Halloween? You've never given me a good bottle of wine, not once. But you've given me some really cool stuff.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. I have a bottle of wine, by the way, that I'm saving for you. And, truly, and it's no joke, I have actually set it aside, and I'm going to bring it to you in the next few weeks. And it's going to be a big surprise. But I'm going to make you wait for a while, and you're going to say, what is it, Dave? What is it? It's very special.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Okay. Probably not as special as the Egri Bikaver, which means bull's blood. It's from Hungary. And it turns out in the 16th century, during the Turkish invasion, they used to feed a kind of wine there called Kadarka to the troops. And it was rumored to have bull's blood in the wine. It would get these troops really revved up. And anyway, this bull's blood wine that they make today has Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Cab Franc in it. But the wine that anchors it is the Kadarka.
I'd like to try that.
I would, but I think they should really put real bull's blood in it.
I'll let you try that.
Do you have any of those really cool light 'em up things for Halloween?
We do. We
I
do.
Love that stuff.
They're
you know?
Great. Those light
Why
up wine glasses.
Why is it that grown adults like us who've had good careers, who should be sophisticated, still get mesmerized by little flashing lights?
It's the kid in us.
I think it's just because we're so used to going to parties and then seeing flashing lights in our rearview mirror.
Not me.
No,
maybe
I'm just
you.
Kidding. I was kidding. Remember last week we were talking about you sell license plate frames that, you know, the sort of I love wine kind of license plate frames. And I'm not going to put one on my car because I don't think that you really want to do that. That's like putting an I hate police license plate frame. You're calling attention to yourself.
I totally
Matt.
Disagree.
All right. Well, we're going to always disagree on that one. Pick your poison glass slippers. I like these. Again, skull and crossbones, except his mouth is wide open. It's one of those little coaster slippers that you put the glass in and it holds your glass steady.
Right.
Yeah.
These are
it's
great.
It's good we're doing this a couple of weeks before Halloween because people could go to epicstyle.com if they want to buy the really cool Halloween stuff that you have. They'll find it there.
Yes.
Hey, one more interesting wine. It's coming from St. Paul, Oregon. It's called Sinister Hand. And it is actually, on the label, is a severed hand. Yes. It's interesting because the label is the family crest depiction of a severed left hand. And it tells the story of a rowing competition among the O'Neills and the O'Reillys. Owen Rowe was an O'Neill, and that's the owner of the winery. And whoever touched land first after rowing across the lake was rewarded with the land he touched. Lagging behind, one of the kinsfolks grabs his sword to cleave his hand and pitches it ashore to touch land first. He won the contest and the land. Isn't that a great story?
That's fabulous.
Okay, one last question before we go, Matt.
Okay.
Which has more ingredients in it, wine or blood?
Wine.
Yes, that's exactly right. Wine has more things in it, which is why if you ever lose blood, you just hook an IV up to a bottle of Silver Oak and you're done. More Grape Encounters Radio coming your way. Check out the cool Halloween products on epicstyle.com. Recently, I came across a product that is so cool, I can't stop talking about it or playing with it. Simply called Napkin and distributed by JNC Enterprises, this little gem comes in the form of a small white breath mint-sized tablet. But don't put it in your mouth because a little moisture causes it to blossom into a soft and sturdy napkin with countless uses. The amazing napkin will soak up a spilled glass of wine quicker than you can say Cabernet Sauvignon, and you'll want to keep a supply in your purse, glove box, golf bag, garage, tackle box, kitchen, and bathroom. Restaurants use the napkin to amaze diners by placing it and a small pitcher of warm scented water in front of guests who are delighted as they watch this clever product come to life. Get your napkins and other innovative products online at napkinjnc.com. Discover the product that I'm calling this year's most delightful innovation at napkinjnc.com or click the napkin link on grapeencounters.com. This is absolutely the greatest napkin trick of all time.
A tropical island vacation doesn't have to mean long lines of security, crowded flights, and a huge travel budget. You'll find breathtaking ocean views, tropical breezes, exceptional dining and shopping, plus hundreds of ways to have fun on land and sea, just 26 miles off the Southern California coast, on enchanting Catalina Island. And there's absolutely no better way to enjoy everything that Catalina has to offer than in your own private Catalina Island vacation rental. Catalina Island Vacation Rentals offers you the choice of nearly 200 island homes, cottages, and condos, including an amazing selection of beautifully appointed Hamilton Cove villas, which offer sweeping ocean views and even come with a golf cart. Savor a special glass of wine on your private balcony and let the magic of Catalina sweep you away. All Catalina Island Vacation Rental properties can be viewed online at catalinavacations.com. Make yourself at home with Catalina Island Vacation Rentals. You'll find your perfect island getaway at catalinavacations.com.
And it's David Wilson with Grape Encounters Radio. You know, there's one undeniable fact about wine. There's a story inside every bottle. And the more you know about how that wine came to be, the more likely you are to appreciate and enjoy what's inside your glass. Now, one way that we compliment a person with exceptional knowledge on a particular subject is to describe them as a walking encyclopedia. Our special guest on this week's edition of Grape Encounters Radio has certainly earned the title in the most literal sense. Charles Sullivan has been called the head sleuth and modern historian of wine in California. If you spend a little time on Google, there are two words that you will find in front of Charles Sullivan's name more than any other. Now, you might expect those words to be something like wine expert or renowned historian or celebrated author, but actually, in my search, the two words that appeared the most were according to. If you're looking for information on California wine, you'll find Charles Sullivan quoted more than anyone else, and that's why countless articles about wine in California contain the phrase, according to Charles Sullivan. Charles Sullivan is the author of Napa Wine, A History, which picks up at 1817 with the movement of Spanish missions into the San Francisco Bay Area, weaves its way through the great wine boom of the 19th century, the crippling effects of Prohibition, and Napa's rise out of havoc to its eventual rivaling of Bordeaux in the judgments of 1976 and 2006. A companion to California Wine by Charles Sullivan is an encyclopedia of wine and winemaking from the Mission period to the present, and is probably the most quoted publication on the subject. Today, it's a real privilege to spend a little time with someone you will never want to debate with on the subject of California wine, Charles Sullivan. Charles, I am so grateful to have you on Grape Encounters today.
Well, I'm glad to talk to you. Always glad to talk about wine history.
Oh my gosh, you have been to, you know, virtually every historic site in California. You've written about virtually every winery out there. What was the point that you decided to say, let's just take on the whole thing?
Well, that was back in the 1970s, very early. Actually, I became sort of a wine nut in the 1960s. My wife and I really were caught up in just drinking wine. But I also was a historian, although my major field in the old days was European history. Anyway, I discovered in the 1970s that, one, I like to visit wineries, and we did. We came very close to visiting every bonded winery in the state for over a period of about 10 years. We also went to Europe, to the wine country in Burgundy and Bordeaux, and to Germany and Italy. But I've really concentrated on California. One of the things that I discovered in these early years is there was no really good professional historical information to be found about the California wine industry. Most of the stuff that passed for wine history in California was baloney. It wasn't accurate at all. So anyway, I started collecting material, and in the late 70s, I started really seriously writing about
it. Why do you think there was that information void?
Well, except for a doctoral dissertation in 1949 at Berkeley on the early history of the wine industry, there was no place for wine writers to go except to the wineries themselves. And, of course, the wineries all had wonderful histories that were, to a certain extent, accurate, but for the most part aimed at selling wine.
Self-promotion, yeah.
It was bad stuff, really bad stuff.
You know, one of the things that we're going to do today is we're going to get into a little bit of the macabre history of the wine business in celebration of the upcoming Halloween holiday. So I know you have some stories for us there. But you really, you had to visit each of these wineries and extract, I guess, the truth from the people that you were interviewing.
Believe it or not, the information that I got came historically from the 19th century, of course. I couldn't talk to anybody, but came from virtually reading wine country newspapers, cover to cover. I've read, for example, the St. Helena Star and the San Jose Mercury and the Sonoma Democrat from, you know, cover to cover from the 1850s until the up into the 1960s and 70s.
So there were well-preserved editions of these publications out there for you?
Oh, yeah. University of California has a fantastic collection. So does the Sonoma Wine Library in Healdsburg. Wonderful collections of old newspapers, and some on microfilm, but some not. And then, of course, there were trade journals. There still are today, which are good sources of historical information. But back then, the trade journals, like the Pacific Wine and Spirit Review and the California Farmer and American Wine Press and Mineral Spirits Review, these are great sources, which had been only tapped by this one professor at Berkeley, who went on to Johns Hopkins and didn't write anything more after he wrote his one book.
That had to be exciting to discover that there was a void there and realize that you had the opportunity to fill it. I mean, what a niche for you.
It was. And in the late 70s and early 80s, I sort of became Wine Spectator's historian. And I would write, probably 10 to 15 articles a year in Wine Spectator on various aspects of California wine history. And then, I live in Los Gatos, which is in the foot of the Santa Cruz Mountains. I wrote a history called Like Modern Edens for the California History Center at De Anza College, where I taught wine and viticulture history. And that was my first book. That was in 1982, and since then I've been grinding out articles and books. But it's been very exciting. And, of course, now there are more people in the field. I promote their work continually. There can't be enough wine historians as far as I'm concerned.
No, that's definitely true. I'm curious about one book that you wrote, which is Zinfandel, A History of a Grape and Its Wine. Why single out that varietal?
That's the question that my chief editor at the University of California asked me. Why is the Zinfandel article in your encyclopedia twice as long as Cabernet Sauvignon? And the answer is it was a mystery grape because its origins were not known, and it was full of myth and legend and misinformation that was passed down over the years, and people wanted to know where it came from. And I did the historical side, and Professor Carol Meredith and her team at UC Davis went along with the DNA discovery, the scientific side, and that's what that book is about. But it all started in the 1970s when I was challenged by a couple of famous Zinfandel producers, why don't you write something? And so I wrote an article for the California Historical Quarterly on the origins of Zinfandel, and that was in 1978. And I've been writing about it ever since.
We are speaking to Charles Sullivan. He is the author of Napa Wine, A History, A Companion to California Wine, and just loads and loads of articles, hundreds of them.
We'll find out just how many books Charles has written in just a moment. But first, in the next month or so, I want to do a story on those rogue Zinfandel grapes that have been growing for over 100 years on Santa Cruz Island, because cuttings from those grapes were taken over to Catalina Island, planted, and now there's this really wonderful vineyard there that includes those Zinfandel grapes. Catalina, I think, is one of the most wine-friendly islands imaginable, because not only do they have this wonderful vineyard there, they have a lot of restaurants that serve top-notch wines, and they have a boat that goes out there, the Catalina Express, that is a great ride where you can just sit back, relax. Sometimes you can see whales out the window and you can sip on a nice bottle of wine. I love Catalina and Catalina Express. It's the best way to get there. And I'm so proud to have them as a sponsor of Grape Encounters Radio. You, by the way, can go to Catalina Island on your birthday absolutely free. If you want to book a ride out to Catalina, go to CatalinaExpress.com. They're fast, comfortable, sleek, beautiful boats. It's a great way to get there. Heck, Catalina is so much fun, but getting there is half the fun. Catalina Express at CatalinaExpress.com. It's a real pleasure to visit this week with Charles Sullivan on Grape Encounters Radio. I'm David Wilson. A moment ago, we talked about the book Zinfandel, A Grape and Its Wine. Charles, how many books in total have you authored?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No, I really don't.
You lost count.
Some of the books that I've written have been in-house histories. For example, I did a history of the old Almaden Winery and the Paul Masson and of Inglenook and of Italian Swiss colonies. Only the Inglenook book became one that you could buy someplace. In other words, they were written for the wine operation itself. But since then, I think there's seven books.
Amazing. For most people, I think California wine history, you know, seems to begin with the judgment of 1976. And for most people, there wasn't much going on before that, but it really began really in the early 1800s, right?
Well, yes. It starts actually in the late 1700s at the California Missions when the Padres got some grapevines up here and produced wine for sacramental wine for a church. And this expanded, and it's been expanding ever since. The great boom in California wine came in the 1880s. That's when Napa was transformed from wheat fields to vineyards.
Is there one particular person that was responsible for that transformation?
No. In the old days, it was said that Agustin Herasi, who founded Buena Vista, was sort of the father of it all. But that's not. He is one of the, by far, the most impressive and energetic and influential people in the early history of California wine in the 1850s and 60s. But he's certainly not the father of the industry. That would be Charles Kohler, whose name has sort of been forgotten. But he's the one who established a big wine house in San Francisco and brought wine up from Southern California and sold it on the East Coast. And so anyway, there are a lot of people, but no one person.
Is there a particular period of time that you have a special affection for?
Well, I have to say that becomes a personal thing. I mean, the 1960s and 70s for me were just very exciting going around. I remember the first case of California wine, fine wine, I should say, that I ever bought was at Beaulieu Vineyards, BV,
right,
in the Napa Valley. And there was nobody in the tasting room the day my wife and I walked in there except the host. And the place belonged to us. There were no tourists or anything like that that came in the whole time we were there. In the midst of it all, a little fellow comes in with a Slavic accent and a white coat on and asks the host, as you showed our private reserve Cabernet Sauvignon. This was 1960. And the little man with the white jacket and Slavic accent was Andrei Chelichev, who was
probably
the most famous winemaker in California history.
Unbelievable.
Didn't know anything at the time, though. I didn't know who he was.
Let me ask you, could you see it coming? Did you have any sort of clairvoyant hunch about where the wine industry was going to go?
By the late 60s, it was pretty obvious. American wine drinkers, well, they are. Americans aren't wine drinkers in the first place, but those who drank wine drank mostly sweet wine, dessert wines, sherry, muscatel, port, angelica, things like that in the 1930s and 40s. And there came a point in 1966 when the seesaw tipped and Americans finally were drinking more dry table wines than sweet wines, dessert wines. And each year, that tip of the seesaw became heavier and heavier and heavier as more and more people turned to drinking table wine with food, not just an alcoholic kick. It was part of the Julia Child transformation of the way people in America thought about food and fine cuisine.
Yeah, the times, they are changing. We have so much more we want to talk to you about. A privilege to have on Charles Sullivan, the author of Napa Wine, also the great reference book, A Companion to California Wine. We'll have more on the macabre history of the California wine industry when we continue on Grape Encounters Radio.
Would you love to go someplace special and enjoy a nice Bordeaux on your birthday? Well, you'll have a lot of money to spend on wine if you celebrate on Catalina Island. That's because the fast and comfortable Catalina Express will take you to Catalina on your birthday absolutely free. This program was unveiled on May 1st to celebrate the 30th birthday of the Catalina Express, and guess who got to be the first to take advantage of this truly awesome offer? Yep, little old Mayday me. Catalina Express has multiple daily departures out of Long Beach, San Pedro, and Dana Point. And for a small fee, you can even upgrade to the Commodore's Lounge, where a nice glass of wine, champagne, or their world-famous Bloody Mary is part of the package. Birthday or not, this is a great time to visit Catalina. For more information about schedules, fares, hotel packages, activities like the new Zipline Eco Tour, or to book tickets online, visit CatalinaExpress.com. Start your adventure at CatalinaExpress.com.
It's so easy to go to Catalina, Catalina Express, Catalina.
You know, the world of Facebook is a lot like the world of Grape Encounters. Millions of people creating community and camaraderie through shared interests and connections. And honestly, who in their right mind doesn't love wine? That's why Grape Encounters Radio has created a group space for you to share your passion. If you're on Facebook and you have yet to join the Grape Encounters Radio group page, what are you waiting for? Thousands of your closest soon-to-be friends are there meeting others, having fun, sharing your own discoveries and experiences, and inspiring us with questions and ideas that help to make each new edition of Grape Encounters Radio the place to gather for a conversation among the wine-loving community. It's easy to join, and the price is right. It's free. All it takes is just a couple of moments of your time the next time you log into Facebook. Just enter Grape Encounters Radio into the search field, and there you are. And once you're our friend on Facebook, share the wealth. Let your family, friends, colleagues, and others who love wine know about your discovery, too. Many of the guests you enjoy hearing on Grape Encounters Radio made their way to the super-secret broadcast location by way of our Facebook group page. Will you be next?
If you got a dime, let's get together and get a little wine.
We're back with more Grape Encounters Radio, and a privilege to have on the line Charles Sullivan. He is by far the most celebrated historian when it comes to California wine. And let's talk a little bit about the darker side of the wine industry. There are some interesting tales that have come out of the California wine regions. Any particular stories that really are standout stories that you can share?
Well, I think most of them have been manufactured by wineries themselves.
You're trying to get traffic.
Yeah, there's one. There's one in New York. Ghosts are part of their marketing strategies. They hold seances and card readings, and I haven't really looked into it, but that's part of the way they sell wine. They have events, and the same thing is true of a winery in Missouri that I've read about. There is one, however, in upstate New York that the owners and the people there are convinced is haunted because of these two vague figures that keep appearing on the front portico of the winery as the sun is going down, you know, in the gray hours when it's getting dark. And people back there, and this is just very recently in the last 10 years, insist that these specters appear at the winery on a regular basis. All I can say is I'm from Missouri on that.
Well, I see those same specters after I've had a bottle of wine myself, so I'm not so sure. Can you tell us the story that occurred in Coloma?
The ghost stories that became popular are from the 1870s and 80s, from Coloma, California. Now, Coloma is a very famous town in the Sierra foothills in El Dorado County, and it's where gold was discovered, in fact,
right.
So it's sort of a tourist attraction. But this Coloma business with ghosts at this one winery is by no means a hoax. People really believe that the two men and the woman who once owned this place return. In fact, it was so hot in the 70s, their home is a huge place. It's now a hotel sitting out in front of the ruins of the winery. My wife and I went up and had dinner and stayed the night over to see if we could hear any of the foot stomping and the howling of the night that is regularly reported out of there. At least was 20 and 30 years ago. We had a very uneventful evening there.
What's behind those stories?
What's behind them are these two men. Martin Allhoff was a very successful winemaker in town, and he was married to this lady. They had a very successful life, and he went crazy one time on a trip to Virginia City and believed that he was being pursued by Treasury agents about brandy or something, but
okay.
He wasn't. And he slit his throat in an outhouse in Virginia City, and to make
Ouch.
Sure he didn't make a mess, he did it over the hole in the potty.
Well, that was nice.
Yeah, and that, of course, set the tone for stories about the Allhoff winery. Now, the ghost thing begins with Mrs. Allhoff's next husband, who is Robert Chalmers. And Chalmers was one of the leading men in El Dorado County, and owned a hotel and a vineyard and a small winery, too. And he took over the Allhoff winery and really made a success of it. It was by far the most successful thing. It's a successful winery in El Dorado County at the toward the end of the 19th century. And he died. Now, the symptoms to me look like Alzheimer's, but the story is that he had contracted syphilis. But who knows? Anyway, he lost his mind, went completely crazy, and his wife locked him up in the cellar because he had, as Alzheimer's victims do, he had the tendency of going out and wandering around the community and causing trouble.
Well, I hope she at least locked him in with a corkscrew.
Well, oh, there's all kinds of stories that she mistreated him, and she was slightly goofy herself. But anyway, after he finally dies, then she lives on till 1913. I guess she was sort of the town character. But in the process, all these stories about thumpings and howlings developed, and a couple of Chronicle writers went and talked to people, and it is generally believed, and I mean seriously, that there are things going on up there. Up in, as I say, I haven't heard anything about it in the last, I would say 25 years. But back in the 60s and 70s, and they didn't have a winery anymore. They weren't trying to sell wine. The guy who owned the hotel at the time kept saying to the reporter over and over, listen, I don't want to play up this ghost thing. I want people to come here and enjoy the hotel. But of course, that's the reason that my wife and I went there, to see if we could experience these happenings. But these two articles, if your listeners want to read them, they're long. They're in the Chronicle in February 15th, 1971, and October 31st. That's interesting. October 31st. That is even.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
1987. One is called The Hotel with the Invisible Guests, and the other one with a picture of Chalmers and Louisa, the Coloma Ghost, Visit to an Eerie Hotel.
Awesome.
That is the ghost story that goes with wine, as far as I'm concerned.
If you want more stories about wine lore in California and beyond, you have to pick up a copy of Napa Wine, A History by Charles Sullivan. And if you just need the consummate reference book, it's a companion to California wine. It's the best education you can possibly get. Charles, I so appreciate you being on Grape Encounters, and we'd love to have you back often.
Well, it was nice. I enjoy doing it.
All right. I really appreciate it.
Sure thing.
Grape Encounters Radio is brought to you by EpicStyle.com. If you are living the wine lifestyle, you can't do it without EpicStyle.com. They have everything imaginable for wine lovers, for spirit and beer lovers. Check it out, EpicStyle.com. Nearly 2,000 products that will make wine drinking a whole lot more fun. It's days like this that you wish you had 12 hours to do this show. I guess there's always next week. Thanks for joining us on Grape Encounters Radio. You can catch all of our past episodes at grapeencounters.com.
Join us next week for more Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson. If you don't, we'll be crushed.